48. The back gate is ajar. Pete doesn't notice. He pelts down the path. As he nears the stream, he passes a scrap of filmy yellow cloth hanging from a branch jutting out into the path. He reaches the stream and turns to look, almost without realizing it, at the spot where the trunk is buried, the trunk that caused all this horror. When he reaches the stepping stones at the bottom of the bank, Pete suddenly stops. His eyes widen. His legs go rubbery and loose. He sits down hard, staring at the foaming, shallow water that he has crossed so many times, often with his little sister babbling away about whatever interested her at the time. Mrs. Beasley, SpongeBob, her friend Ellen, her favorite lunchbox, her favorite clothes. The filmy yellow blouse with the billowing sleeves, for instance. Mom tells her she shouldn't wear it so often because it has to be dry-cleaned. Was Teens wearing it this morning when she left for school? That seems like a century ago, but he thinks she was. I'm taking her to a safe place, Red Lips had said. A place where we can meet once you have the notebooks. Can it be? Of course it can. If Red Lips grew up in Pete's house, he would have spent time at the wreck. All the kids in the neighborhood spent time there until it closed, and he must have known about the path because the trunk was buried less than 20 paces from where it crossed the stream. But he doesn't know about the notebooks, Pete thinks. Not yet. Unless he found out since the last call, that is. If so, he will have taken them already. He'll be gone. That would be okay if he's left Tina alive. And why wouldn't he? What reason would he have to kill her once he has what he wants? For revenge, Pete thinks coldly. To get back at me. I'm the thief who took the notebooks. I hit him with a bottle and got away at the bookstore, and I deserve to be punished. He gets up and staggers as a wave of lightheadedness rushes through him. When it passes, he crosses the creek. On the other side, he begins to run again.